serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 93-year-old George Poplin, recorded with three generations of his descendants listening in at his son Dick's home in Fresno, California. We're going to hear briefly from Dick in a bit, and you may also hear the rest of that crew chuckling a time or two in the background along the way. You can find a photo of that group at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, where there's also a short video of George pointing out to us what shrapnel from a German mortar shell did to him along the Siegfried Line near Hellenthal, Germany. We've heard how one arm was in a cast for 6 months, the other for a year, and that didn't mean he was fully recovered. The impact of injuries like those can really linger on.
We're talking February of 45. That's 72-plus years since this happened to you. How have those injuries affected you in all those years since?
Well, there are certain things I can't do with my arms, but I taught typing, which is a lot of fingers.
Yeah.
Did it for 32 years.
Where'd you teach?
Kerman High School.
Did your students ever know what you'd been through in the war?
Not especially.
Never talked about it?
Oh, they wanted to know what caused that.
Why your arms didn't look like somebody else's arms.
Yeah.
What'd you tell them?
I just told them the truth.
Yeah. You mentioned the woman who wrote a letter for you home to your wife. I imagine if you're in the hospital for a year, there are probably a lot of people that helped you, that did things for you that you couldn't do for yourself. Are there some other stories like that or other people that you still think about or you remember?
Well, there was this one fella who had a broken leg, and he didn't like to go to the cafeteria because that's where he broke his leg falling out of the steps. So I wasn't eating anything, sweet stuff. So when I got my plate of food, I ate the sweets off of it, and he ate the regular food. But he fed me.
Because you couldn't feed yourself?
He took me to the bathroom and brushed my teeth. It's a great thing.
What was his name?
Lige.
And he did this for quite a while?
Yeah.
He probably got out of there before you did.
I don't think so, because he got the cast off of his leg, went back to the cafeteria, and fell out of it again.
I guess he wanted to stick around you. He was having so much fun. And I understand that his name is one that is carried on in your family.
Yeah.
What's that story?
Well, I don't know. You know how it is when you got the name kids. Seems to be a difficult job.
Uh-huh.
We come up with Richard, and Elijah's the middle name.
So your son's middle name is Lige because of that man who helped you.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to come home after all of that?
Wonderful.
But you didn't know where your wife was or what she was doing?
No.
You still hadn't heard from her, right?
No.
You'd written the letter, but you didn't know she got it.
Ah.
So how did that unfold?
When I got into New York City, I called and got a hold of her, talked to her. So I felt better after that.
I bet. So you called her when you got to New York, but then actually showing up in Oklahoma and seeing her again must have been something.
It was. Very definitely. We had 40 good years. Almost. She passed away on March the 7th, and marriage date was May 31st.
Were there ever days in the hospital where you weren't sure you were going to see her again, or you wondered what was going to happen there?
Not really.
Did you ever feel sorry for yourself, or wonder why did this have to happen to me?
No.
Why not?
I don't know, but I'm just not one that lets things get to me.
I imagine you saw quite a few other people who were in pretty bad shape, too.
One fellow had his hand, this whole part of it, just left his thumb. And we kid him about going back. He was from New York, going back there and getting a job as a policeman to direct traffic.
Were there other things that happened in that whole recovery time that you look back on and you say, boy, that really helped me?
No. See, we were in a ward with, I don't know, 10, 20 beds. So we all were pretty good friends. And kind of kept people buoyed up.
Did you guys get updates on what was happening in the war?
Yes. And the day that Japan surrendered, I just turned over in the bed. I'd had surgery that day on my arm.
What did that mean to you, to hear that news?
Happiness. We started going to a Baptist church here in Fresno then in 49.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with the pastor about coming in on the Queen. We came home on the Queen Elizabeth. And he said, Well, about 10 days after you got home, I got on the Queen Elizabeth, and we were going to South Pacific, and the war ended.
Uh-huh.
They turned around and come back.
How about that? Did you sail into New York?
Yeah.
Did you see the Statue of Liberty?
Absolutely. Beautiful thing.
I imagine everybody was out on the deck to see that, huh?
They were. It's a beautiful sight.
You ever think back about that and what happened to you, the injuries you suffered, how close you came to being killed?
Just thank the Lord for being with me.
I mean, there's two kids and five grandkids and six great-grandkids who wouldn't be here.
That's right.
Anything else that whole experience taught you that you think people should know about?
You just have to take life as it comes at you.
Well, it came at you pretty hard that day.
Yeah, but it was coming at a lot of other people, too.
Did they give you the Purple Heart while you were still in the hospital?
Yeah. Oh, I also got the combat infantry badge.
Uh-huh.
After I was in the hospital. Well, it meant $10 a month more money.
That's right. Did somebody come and pin it on you?
Yeah. At the time, it didn't mean a whole lot, but it's meant a lot since then.
And I know you weren't over there very long.
Yeah.
Well, you were over there very long, just not in combat all that long. But what gives you pride today when you think back about yourself, the guys you served with, 16 million Americans in uniform, and what happened in World War II? What are you most proud of?
Well, I took care of Hitler. And in 1993, my second wife and I went with the Fresno Teachers Association, retired teachers, to Munster, Germany on their 1200th birthday. And I had lots of thoughts about going back to Germany, you know?
I bet.
But we got a family. We lived with family for 11 days. They couldn't have treated us any better. I mean, you'd thought we were the king and queen of England. Everything. He took us places his wife hadn't even been. Made a good feeling about Germany after that.
I know what I didn't do. I didn't say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us your story. Would you have any advice, any encouragement, any words to share with someone today? It's a different war, it's different weapons, it's different times, but there are guys coming home with similar injuries.
Yeah.
Is there something you would say for those folks or those families who are dealing with what you dealt with so many years ago?
Well, when I first come home, I couldn't do anything with my hands a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of cussed the Germans out for causing all that, but I got over that.
Was there something that helped you get over it?
Well, the best thing that happened was that trip we took to Germany.
It was cathartic for you? Let go of some of that animosity?
Yeah, very good.
And I assume that you took advantage of the GI Bill to go to college when you came back?
Absolutely.
And you went to school here, Fresno State? When did you graduate there?
52. The part where I promised the Lord I would serve him the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And we come to California and I work in the fields, planting tomatoes, capping tomatoes, all those sort of things. And the day before Dick was born, I got a job with the union, laborers union, and I went to work with them. The next year, the guy asked me if I wanted to work for the bureau. I said, sure. And I went to work. My first check was $56. But 3 weeks later, they shut down the job, and the people working for the bureau, and the people working for the bureau kept on. I got a salary all winter, and the other guys didn't. I took this test to see if I could better myself on the job, and the man said, you know, with your hands like in the shape they're in, you'll never be able to do hard labor the rest of your life. Said, do you ever think about being a school teacher? And I laughed. I said, my teachers would roll over in their grave if they knew I was going to teach. But in that same time, month, we moved to Fresno, enrolled at Fresno State. Dick was 2 years old. I went to school until February of 49, and we had never gone. We were saved down in Orange Cove at a mission of Mennonites. But I wasn't Mennonite, so you couldn't join the church, you know. Anyway, they said you probably would like to join a Baptist church somewhere. So we moved here in 49, 6 months after I got here. We were having a little squabble on Sunday morning. My wife said, you should be in church. I said, well, I know where there is one because I pass it every day on my way to school. And it's First Southern Baptist Church downtown. And we went, joined the church later, and I've been there ever since.
Almost 70 years.
I had 47 years as treasurer and about that many years as a deacon. Now all I do is sit at the door and hand out bulletins.
That's all?
I get a kick out of that, and so do the people, really.
I bet they do.
I get lots of hugs.
I wonder if you might get a few more after this is on the radio. They're going to want to come meet you. Now they know where to find you.
Do people listen to the radio?
You'll find out on the next Sunday morning, I guess. You can tell the whole church to listen.
Okay.
They'll love that whiskey story.
I should have left that one out.
Anything else you remembered?
No, that was the part I wanted to tell.
I'm glad you did. You kept up your end of the bargain, huh?
Yeah.
And I guess he kept his, too?
He sure has.
I got one more question for you. I don't know if it's an easy one to answer. You got a couple of your great-grandsons sitting right here listening. And most of us alive today, we didn't live through World War II. We don't know what it was like, what it was all about, how all-consuming it was.
Well, living in Oklahoma, we didn't know either until, you know, really.
So what do you think we need to know today? What do we need to understand and remember about World War II and what you and all those other people did?
Remember that they did a good thing, that it wasn't easy, took a lot of stuff out of them.
Was it worth it?
Well, I suppose it must have been.
We hear the number a lot, especially on this program. 406,000 Americans died while serving in World War II. But so many more were wounded and came home. Physical wounds like yours. Psychological wounds, too. People are still haunted by that.
Yeah, they are.
Do you ever deal with any of that yourself?
Nope.
Good. Is there anything we should know about what you've had to deal with physically all these years because of those injuries that you suffered on our behalf?
Just a lot of things I couldn't do with my hands.
Did you still arm wrestle your sons?
No. I was very careful with my arms. I wouldn't even go skating.
So if your son wanted to go outside in the yard and throw the ball around?
Oh, yeah, we did that. In fact, that's how I broke this arm. They did a bone graft, and I couldn't move my wrist.
Uh-huh.
But I threw a ball, and it twisted my wrist, and that bone snapped.
Ouch.
And so after that, I could move my wrist.
There's your silver lining, huh?
I went to a doctor here in Fresno, and he said, if you don't get that arm fixed within 5 years, your arm's going to shrivel up and you won't be able to use it. I said, I'll see you in 5 years. And it made it a lot longer than that. He died and I didn't.
Still going at 93 and serving as an inspiration to those people who grab a bulletin from those aging hands at church or hear the folksy charm and resilient spirit in his voice. George's son Dick has heard that voice his entire life. And in the time we have left, let's get a little perspective from Dick on growing up with a father whom World War II left wounded and disfigured, but never defeated.
I don't really remember thinking that he was any different than any other dad. The one thing he threw underhand when we played catch, he didn't throw overhand. So that was different, and I knew he had an arm problem. But he didn't really tell us much about the war, didn't really realize everything that happened to him during that war. I do say I want to say to you, Dad, that we do appreciate your sacrifice in the war and all the other veterans that gave their life and just served in the war to provide us with the freedoms that we have today. And we don't want to forget that, and we want to remember the sacrifice that you paid so that we could have these freedoms, and we thank you for that.
Have you ever imagined yourself in his shoes and wondering how you would have handled going through what he went through?
Yes, I have, and I guess you don't really know how you'd handle it until you actually go through something like that, but I have wondered what I would have done.
Yeah, and your life was on the line there too.
This is true. He never lets anything get him down. He has such an upbeat attitude and about everything, even the things later in life here that he's had gone wrong physically that have put him in the wheelchair, and he takes everything in stride, and that impresses me, and I pray that I'd be able to do the same thing.
Amen to that. If only all of us could face difficulties with that same persevering spirit that George Poplin has displayed for all these years. We're out of time for now. Don't forget to check out the photos and video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Until next time, I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you of that truth underscored so powerfully through this wounded veteran story today. Freedom is not free.